PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 157. This is a show where we talk about all things geeky. It's got a computer in it at some point. We're going to talk about it. I'm one of the co-hosts here on the show, Martin Obando. Hey guys, it's nice to have you all with us, joining us today. But before we get started, I want to give Father's Day's coming up. It's never too soon to think about your father. I'm a dad. I'm already prepping my kids. This is what daddy wants. This is what I want. This is what I want. I'm asking for a car this year. We'll see. We don't know. Podnuts.com/Amazon. I don't even know if you can buy a car there or not, but maybe Tesla's you can. So anyways, if you're going to buy something for yourself, for your father, podnuts.com/Amazon. A little bit of that money comes back to the show, helps us with our show, helps with other shows like the Podnuts live call-in show every Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, the Podnuts Daily. If you are a tech and you want to talk about what you do, how you do it, how you're succeeding in your tech field, in your industry, give us a call. And just go to podnuts.com and click on the Podnuts Daily button there on the left-hand side. There's a button right there, and Jeff Halish will give you a call. Set up a time. You can talk to Jeff on the air and talk about you. What do you do? How do you do it? And how are you successful? But podnuts.com/Amazon. Help us out a little bit. All right. My two co-hosts with me today, Mitch Mad Max Heyman and Tim Steeler Bauermeister. That's all I got. I couldn't find anything to rhyme with Tim. What rhymes with Mitch? Mad Max.
Doesn't rhyme.
Well,
you can't. I got something rhymes with Mitch.
Yeah, but you can't say it on here.
It's appropriate. I mean, it's like, it's true.
They call me the office Nazi. But anyway,
that's
enough story. Well, I mean, I find I got to turn in when I find errors, and I'm just doing what I'm told to do, and so somebody might get.
So you're the man.
Somebody might get written up.
You wouldn't make a warehouse man cry. Yeah, yes, you would. Nah. I'd say you enjoy it. What you like? What do you mean you have to like? What errors? Like what? Somebody screws up, you gotta like rat them out.
Shipping receiving errors. That's specific my job. No. Well, receiving errors. I just give it to I don't do that. I just give it to my boss, and he takes it over from there. So I do what I'm told to do.
So you're the man behind the curtain, essentially.
Well, snitches get stitches.
Yeah. Ignore that man behind the curtain.
He's just counting his change.
I'll take up for him when I can. So.
It's accounting. It's numbers, man. It's all going to work out. Stuff coming in, stuff going out. It all has to add up, right? People on the other end, they got to be happy with what they're
getting. We lost, so no one knows where I work, I guess. We lost 14 skids of, out here we had BJ's whole, I shouldn't say any company's name. Anyway, we lost. Like a good bit of product. We can't figure out how we lost it. So,
how big is a skid?
So we're not talking about a handful.
Well, you have Costco out there or like
The pallet,
a whole pallet,
talk about a pallet, right? Pallet
you lost 14 pallets of stuff.
It could be maybe 1,500, couple grand a pallet somewhere around here.
I would be checking people's trunks as they leave the.
They're not going to get a pallet in their trunk, but.
Hey, how big are those cars? You drive a forklift home and back.
Yeah.
I
think it's a process error. I mean, like with this, we use like two, three different systems, and they got to jive with each other, sync with each other. I think something's wrong there. So I think it's something else.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
It is crazy, but I didn't do it.
I mean, that's either like just a clerical accounting thing somewhere, or I'm not worried about the skids. I'm worried about the driver of the truck that's now missing. I mean, that's a truck. Nah. There's a truck that's missing. Have you ever heard of the Truckin' Bozo? Do you know who that is?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't remember DJ. Probably not to you, Martin.
No,
the Truckin' Bozo. There's really nothing. He's not a clown. I don't even know how he got that name. But
wait, is he a clown?
No. Martin doesn't like clowns.
No. This you would like this Truckin' Bozo. He's not. I don't even know how he got this name. He's like nothing Bozo-esque. After years and years of listening to, I have no idea where he even got this name. But how about 700 WLW? Does that mean anything to you?
Chicago.
Does Dale Summers mean anything to you?
Is it Chicago?
Yeah. Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Okay.
It's it's just they just call it. It's just called the big one, and it they have this they for decades and decades they've had this monster antenna, and you know at on a clear night in the summer, I mean you can hear 700 WLW so, like
here too,
like all lower 48 or something insane. It's ridiculous, but is that his real name, Dale Somers?
Yeah,
all right. Well, there you go. I couldn't. I haven't heard him in a few years. I couldn't quite remember what it is.
He off the air. In 2012,
Billy Cunningham.
Okay, well, there you go. I haven't heard in a few years. That, and I'm actually sorry to hear that. But he. I mean, come on, talk radio. I mean, come on, it's like podcasts before there were podcasts.
Oh, and he died. Sorry,
really? Well, he's probably not on the air anymore.
No.
What did he die of? Does it say?
He was on hospice, so it doesn't say. Mm. Oh wait, he had Addison's disease.
Oh wow. Okay. So well, you know. Anyway, the speaking of truckers, what that made me think of was that, you know, who's listening to, you know, this, especially if you're picking up a station, you know, in one state, you're many, many states away, you tune in, you still got the same station, you're going to be reaching a lot of truck drivers because, I mean, you know, what consistency would they have? I mean, you know, up until 10 years ago with the technology, you know, they had that AM radio. And so, this guy, it was a talk show, ran nights. I mean, I'm thinking it was like midnight to five or something like that.
Yeah.
But he ran the best show because this guy, he was really, really intelligent. The guy could speak intelligently about anything. But, you know, yeah, you would have truckers calling in.
The show's still on. The show is still on. I'm pretty sure it's still on. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But it would run the gamut. Now, I mean, there was some screening involved. But, you know, you would get what you might imagine like a stereotypical trucker. But, I mean, you would also get some really, really bright guys who that's just what they do for a living, mm-hmm. really bright, have a lot of time, well-read. And so – and this guy could speak with anyone. He could make anybody look good. He could make anybody look bad that had it coming. But he was really, really the thing that really would come across. But he was a very caring, very human, really liked people. And so every so often, the trucker would go missing. You know, the guy left with a load and he never arrived where he should have. And I tell you what, this stuff is scheduled. It's expected. When a trucker doesn't show up, that doesn't just happen because I mean, they're breaking down. Well, yeah, they got the CB radio. They can get help like that. So, you know, every so often, a trucker go missing? Of course, you know, sometimes it didn't end well. I mean, they find the load one place, they'd find the guy somewhere else. And so whenever that would happen, that they would lose a trucker, you know, he would just sound that alarm and, you know, hey, we're looking for this guy. We're looking, this is the truck he was driving. These are the numbers on the truck. And you know, even as a kid, like that really came across to me that, you know, the Summers, I don't want to call him Truck and Bozo anymore. I don't even know where he got that name, but that there was that eye in the sky that, you know, that lonely, lonely job, people that they could connect with him. And, it reminded me of that losing that load. It's like, well, who cares about the load at this point? We're looking for the drivers. So that reminded me of him. Well, hats off to him. I'm like I said, I've been out of the area. I haven't listened to 700 WLW for quite a while. I'm sorry to hear he's gone, but he hats off to you. Wherever you are now, pal, you certainly meant a lot to me growing up. So, hey, this is show 157.
Yes.
Prime. That's prime, baby.
Oh, like
you know
rib.
You know what it is?
Like prime rib.
It's a what? Sexy prime. Did you know this?
I did not. Why is it a sexy prime?
It's a sexy prime. The prime number before it is 151. The prime number after it is 163. All three are separated by the number 6, and they call that they call those sexy primes. Like the number 5 and number 11, those are sexy primes. However, since there are three in a row, all divided by 6. 151, 157, 163. That is known as a sexy prime triplet. Folks, we are in the middle of a sexy prime triplet. I really
Stephen Hawkins here.
You're joining us tonight. This is where it's at.
That's it. Sexy prime triplet in the house.
That's it. Sexy prime triplet. We are the sexy prime triplets.
Maybe you do.
Not,
I have that layer of fat like you like on prime rib.
Well, tell me about it.
Anyway, so I think the question was, how are you? And I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
How are you, Martin?
I am doing good. I'm doing real good. Things have been tapering off, steady, but yet not crazy. I've been sleeping more, being able to softball seasons in swing, and just loving every one of it. Our team is 5-0 right now.
Yeah,
we're halfway through the season. We only play 10 or so games. We just got confirmation that we're going to have an all-star team. So I'm helping put that together. But we are. I don't know what it was. If our team has grown up, they've just doing things better. But
gelled, baby.
Yeah, this year, and we even have new players. Everybody's just gelling, and we're getting hit at people who don't hit until well into, you know, you're almost the tournament before they finally start getting their swing, literally and figuratively. Nice. And they're stepping up to plate, and yeah, we're good, but we're not great. There's always room for improvement. So I'm just very pleased with our little softball team that we have.
Congratulations.
Beautiful. Thanks.
And work is going well. Things are moving along. A couple of big projects that are actually ending now, so that's good. We've kind of tapering off, and one is the share file. Remember the whole big issue with share file and the ASCII ampersand that created duplicates. Remember me talking about that for a little bit?
Yes.
So that's all.
What was that?
Well, I have a company who's going with ShareFile, and they're going to they wanted to use ShareFile to upload all their data. So they're going to use ShareFile for cloud-based storage, not their primary backup, but this way that people off-site can access data and they can share data because they have multiple sites. So they have almost 110 gigs worth of data, but they wanted us to use a third-party company called Trevelia. We use Trevelia, but in the process of that, Trevelia changed their ASCII code for the ampersand symbol, and then when we turned on syncing with the share file application, it didn't see the ampersand correctly, so now we have duplicates. And so then we had to basically wipe it all out, start from scratch. You know, I mean, I had to, with creating the duplicates, then it started creating duplicates in my offshoot, my crash plan. So we really had to we shut everything off. We fixed the local drive, got everything, all the duplicates done, cleaned it up, and then we cleaned out our backup, our offsite backup, and reloaded it back up, and then we cleaned out the cloud stuff and reloaded it back up, so it's now done. And it was all working, everything was fine, and the day that I went to go hit go with it, we got another error. And I was very hesitant on telling this to the lady at the office that I've been working with, because she was just about ready to just flip a switch. She was so frustrated with everything. Well, what was happening was because we had switched space, ampersand space, which is 3 characters, to space, AND space, which is now 5 characters, it put us over the limit of file length. So how did we find that? It was like 220.
Okay. Well, but Windows used to have a limit. Was it roughly that? I don't even remember what it was. But
yeah. No. But what was happening is they have subfolders and subfolders and subfolders and subfolders. Yes. You know what I mean? And so what was happening was it was coming over the limit. So I got tech support on the phone, and we were going through some stuff. Well,
how did you discover that?
He found this great site called Path. This great application called PathLengthChecker.codeplex.com. And if you go there, you get this really cool download that you can say, look in this directory, include everything in subfolders, and then give your minimum path length and your maximum path length, and then hit go, and it'll tell you everything that has something that the path length is longer than how many characters you've given it. So we went through and said 220 is our max, go, or our minimum is 220, and then we hit go, and then it gave us everything. Then all we had to do was go through some of those and delete and modify those. But if you had a folder name that was long, then we just would adjust the folder length that handles everything in the subfolders, and then run it again. And we just messed with it. We only had about 50 sites, 50 folders to go through.
That makes some work of it then.
Oh yeah, modified them. She said, okay, check it again. I checked it. It was golden. I hit sync, turned it on, and it was done. But this is one of those keep in your back pocket applications called Path Length Checker that you can figure out how long the path structure is.
This is a Windows application?
Windows application. We ran it on server 2012. It runs on server 2008. It's been around since, well, the latest version is June 23 of 2014. So it's, you know, it's not new, but well, it's, no. You know, this does exactly what I wanted to do. Then you can hit copy paths to clipboard with links, without links. So you can just copy everything you see right to a notepad, send it off, and there you go. It's, man, this thing is, this saved a whole lot of time having to, instead of having to go through and look at all of these different, you know, trying to count, trying to figure out which one was long, which one wasn't. Win-win.
Excuse me. You know, the, of course, you know, my frame of reference, the thing that this reminds me of is doing data recovery in Linux, you end up with a lot of this sort of stuff, and then you come into Windows, and Windows is like, it's like, no, nope, can't do it. And that's why I asked if this was a Windows application. I mean, that's what I saw was Windows. Is there a way to, I'm sure, I mean, somebody's jumping up and down the audience right now. There's got to be some way to head that off in Linux. I wonder if, but this doesn't seem to be it, though. I'm, because it's just a Windows, it's Windows-only application, right?
That you're right, around. Right.
Yeah.
So you want to know how to display?
Well, instead of doing my data recovery and then going to a Windows machine and then discovering that there are all paths that are too long, if there was a that's my only frame of reference here. So I looked. I thought, well, maybe this has like they have a Linux version or something here, but I'm not seeing that, and so I'm just throwing it out there. Is there like some simple way of doing that in Linux that I'm just not aware of? Or
well, it looks like and I don't. I mean, everybody. The great thing about Linux is that everybody can do it a different way. The bad thing is that I Googled it, and there's 14 different ways on how to come up with the same thing depending on what distro you're using. So yeah, okay. I just Googled display path length in Linux, and there's plenty of different scripts and files and you know folders you can run.
Yeah, okay. It's actually like I said, it was my only frame of reference.
Right.
This isn't something that's actually ever really bothered me very much. It's you know, easy enough. I just go back, fix it. But I
would say though, you could probably find out the information natively in Linux by just running commands that are already built in, as opposed to Windows where you have to go download a third party utility to do it. I just don't know the commands off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's cool. I feel like my question didn't deserve this much response.
No, it did. No, but somebody out there probably knows how to do it and is can do it much quicker than I can do it because I always have to Google it.
Yeah, it's never been like a huge deal. Like I said, this is good though. I like this because this is I mean this resolves issues. These are the links are okay. Like within Windows is okay with it, but it's when you're actually uploading it to this share. I'm sorry, I've like
right. Well, they have a limit. So Windows has a limit, and they have a limit, and the limits may not match.
Apparently, it's less.
Well, right. So on the local server, it's you know d:\data. Data. But then when you upload it, we put it in a folder called Portland space Y space drive. So now we've got to take that into account on their network for the length. And so, you know, I think their length is more than 220, but we went, you know, we shot less and then made everything go shorter that way in case it grows, we have room.
That is actually a very important consideration because I would have been standing there scratching my head like, well, what's going on here? And so I don't know if that would have. I don't know what it would have taken for me to. Aha! Well, you know, I discovered this, and then the solution is like fantastic. So, yeah, it's great. I love it.
So that there solved a big issue. All the data is now uploaded. We're working with getting users installed. I'm going to be scheduling training for next week. So it's kind of I see a closure of this process that they bought this product in February and it's been broken, and we just haven't been able to get it working right. Tech support really kind of felt like they fell down. On this, I really was having a lot of trouble with that. Tech support's kind of stepped up their game. This is Citrix ShareFile. They're a big name company. They're probably $1 million company.
Yeah, we use it.
If not billions, and I just felt like they really fell down. They have redeemed themselves. Now that it's working functionally and we can do things, I see the simplicity of it and I see how effective it can be. And some of the things that I'm running into, I go, I wish Windows could do that. Especially with file permissions. So it is a bit spendy, but my company, like I said, this company that they're working, that I'm working with, has sites all over the Pacific Northwest and even into California. How do you share data that everybody can see without the need of a terminal server? So you're not having all these people VPNing or RDPing in and put it in the cloud and go that way. So I think it's going to work out really well for them now that it's finally working. But it's so hard when the foundation keeps breaking and the walls keep crumbling in to realize how nice the house is going to look when it's finally finished.
Yeah. So, very good, Martin.
So I've been finishing that one up. Ran into some issues at the school. Had one gentleman who's had just computer issue after computer issue after computer issue. And very nice gentleman, very nice guy. It just always kind of felt like his computer was broken all the time. And I couldn't figure out what was going on with it. I would, clean it up, do some scans, run some scans, defrag it, just do all the normal stuff that would just, you would think, why is this computer running so slow? Well, episode 154, episode 542, I was way off, of the Mike Tech Show, he talks about Intel Speed Step. And I thought, oh, that's something I should think about. And I should remember that kind of just in the back of my head. And what Mike was talking about is that he had a client where their computer would boot up, log in, and then it would take 10 minutes before the network card would enable. Mm. And so the user would just be sitting there and really couldn't do anything. And I thought, that is that's absurd. So he was really frustrated with it. Finally got it fixed. So what he ended up doing was getting hold of Dell. Dell saying, hey, let's just try this out. And inside of the BIOS, and I found this inside of the Lenovo BIOS as well. So it's not just Dell. You go in there and turn under security or performance. What was that, Mitch?
You turn it off, right?
You uncheck it. And the whole point of Speed Step is to make things faster and more efficient. But
It sets your CPU down.
Right. This is what it says. The Intel Speed Step was, disabling the settings, quote unquote, puts your computer in the highest performance state and prevents the Intel Speed Step applet or native operating system driver from adjusting the processor for performance. So with it on, it picks and chooses what to disable, enable, give preference to, based on what it feels should be doing that. So you turn it off, and now it's just red line, everything, just high performance.
Yeah.
So what was so I turned that off, gave it back to the gentleman. He worked with it for a couple of days, and he said, huge, huge improvement on that. So what I was hearing from the clients, and this wasn't just this gentleman, what I was hearing from my clients is that they're on a domain. I do not know if the gentleman that Mike Smith was working was on a domain or not. What was happening for me at the school was if SpeedStep is turning off the network card on a domain when they're logging in, you're asking for domain credentials, there are things running in the background like login scripts, for example.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, it's all critical.
All of the configs, the group policy updates, everything. So if SpeedStep is on and it is, in fact, turning off the network card, then as my clients go to log in, their cache credential will let them move forward. Because they don't have domain access yet, so their cache credential makes them move forward, and then their computer hangs for 15 minutes until Intel SpeedStep releases the network card to communicate with the network. Then the network then pushes down group policy updates, login scripts, and now the client can get online. So I went around to every teacher computer that had these Dells, and I turned off SpeedStepping, and I have heard nothing but good news out of this thing.
Yeah, I've done that in some of my computers, but but I'm not on a network, Now,
I don't even know if Mike Smith's client was on a network, and I want to think that, and I'll have to, I sent him an email, and I haven't heard anything back, but I want to think that maybe he wasn't because he was able to log in, get to his desktop, and then the network card was failing or not being turned on. So it's like it wasn't waiting on the network.
We have similar things. I can log into my computer fast, but when I sign in, it takes a long time for everything to load up. Not all the time, but a lot of times it does.
Have you noticed a difference with turning off SpeedStep?
I haven't even messed with that. My machine's an older machine, Core 2 Duo. It probably has it in it, though. I might check that. I mean, I've done before, what I've done? I've unplugged the Ethernet cable and everything comes right up and just plug it right back in.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where I had thought, oh, I need to remember that. And then I got talking to this teacher and I thought, oh, light bulb. and it seemed to work. So Speed Step.
I didn't know. I thought it just had everything to do with the CPU. It just slowed it down. You know, okay. Depending on when it needs more. I didn't know it had anything to do with turning anything else off or, you know, other, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. One of the gentlemen, this website that's in the links there, he has a Dell M4600, and he goes through and actually has some performance ratings and goes through it and speed and power and what's going on. So he walks through it. But that's episode 542 for Mike Smith.
I'll have to read up on that because, yeah, I didn't realize that the Speed Step had. I thought, it affected, CPU timing
that's,
or something.
That's what I thought.
Kind of like I imagine like the old 70s, Cadillacs, 468, turning cylinders on and off. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's like, I didn't realize that it could have that effect. I want to read up on that. That's really interesting. I don't care if you do a voodoo dance. If you do the same voodoo dance in front of every single computer and they're all working out, I'd say that's a good fix.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Here it is.
I wanted to throw that one out there.
It's Intel microprocessors that allow the clock speed of the processor. To be dynamically changed to different. P states by software. This allows the processors to meet the instantaneous performance needs of operations being performed. I mean, like it speeds up when it needs it and slows down when it doesn't. I don't know. It's the way I
look. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like it would have anything to do with the network card, but
no.
I guess it
could, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a BIOS story for you.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if you guys can solve it. I had to make a BIOS setting change to get my printer to work.
That sounds weird.
I had a printer. I connected it up. I could install all the drivers, everything, but it wouldn't work. I had to go into the BIOS and make a BIOS change.
Was there like three different settings, Tim? You could pick from?
Nope.
Just one.
I had to make one change.
I've done it before, but on older machines.
Did you have to enable USB?
Nope. However, you're close.
Was USB set to the wrong setting, like the speed setting?
I wasn't connecting the printer via USB.
Oh, parallel L. You had to turn
it
to parallel.
That's it.
Yeah, the LTP.
Who uses parallel ports?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I have. You know what? I do because it's when you got the kid with the project at 11:30 at night, and it has to go tomorrow. And the only printer in the house for some reason that has toner in it is the one from 1935.
I was going to say who has
came out of like it came out. It's like army surplus. And, now I'm searching around the house trying to find the only machine. It's like, here's a parallel. I found the kit. I plug it in. I could not get this blasted printer to work. And I was like pulling my hair out. And I was like, I wonder if there is. And I went in the BIOS. I said, son of a gun. I had to, the parallel part, it was just disabled, I guess, by default. And so I enabled it, and I mean, I had drivers, everything installed, rebooted it, and it's just now printed all happy. Didn't have to install it, didn't do anything. It was like I just had to flip that switch, in the BIOS, and I come back and it's printing. And I'll tell you what, this thing, it's a
What did you do again? I was listening, but
in the BIOS, on this particular machine, there is
LPT1.
There's all the it has listed like the serial ports, and it has them. And I'll admit that I deal with serial ports and parallel ports and addresses only often enough to like have no idea what I'm doing. But the serial ports, those were enabled, they were available, they had their addresses. But I scrolled down, I clicked through a couple things, and I finally found like these magic words about parallel port, and it said, enable it. I'm like, well. I want to do the opposite of whatever it is right now. And do you want me to sign at this address? I don't care what address you sign. Just do something different. And, it's like click, click, boom, and reboot. And that was it. So for whatever reason, I guess that's just – I don't know. I mean, I don't know why that would even be an option. If it's on there, it should be available unless there's some, once again, a power thing or I don't know. Yeah, this is it's actually a seriously awesome printer. It's a
parallel triple
LaserJet 2100.
Oh, we use them.
TN. It's got, you know,
we used to use them at work.
Cool paper trays. This thing like just slaved away in an office for years and years and years. And somebody gave it to me. They're like,
they'll last forever.
It already has
for a while. And, I mean, you know, to a point.
I've bought so many printers. I've bought so many toner cartridges, and this thing just sits here and it just slaves away. It has the same toner cartridges I have when I got it, and I just need to. I just had to find a printer I could stick it to. So, yeah, that tripped me out. I'm like, I had to go in the BIOS to get my printer to work.
But good deal.
Anyway, so it's going.
Wow, good find.
And the project got done, and the kid went to school, and I don't know, didn't fail.
That's always good.
Yeah. Because I don't want kids. These kids got to get out of my house as soon as possible. There's no extra years of school, no hanging around here. Dad, I'm like 22, I haven't graduated. I'm like, no, you're out of here, man. There's a two-seater somewhere, and your mother and I are gonna be driving. You're not gonna be living here.
Right.
I'm changing the locks. You're 18 in a day. The locks are. You're not getting in the house. Key will not work.
Very nice.
So yeah, very nice.
I came across.
Anyway.
How
do you segue from that?
Speaking of kids kicked out of their homes. Yeah.
Look what you've done to your mother.
If
I married a beautiful woman, who is right. this?
If they want to reach you, but yet they don't know your address, or they think maybe you've changed your address, but they're not quite sure, I came across a website called Email Checker.
Hmm.
And what this will allow you to do, so what happens is you get an email address and you go, you know, I'm not even sure that's right. Is that a legitimate email address? And you either have to wait for it to bounce, but sometimes it doesn't bounce right away. email-checker.net. It's a web-based tool, and you know, in Windows you can drop out to a terminal, in Linux you can drop out to a terminal, and you can actually run, you know, you can run your SMTP commands or your commands in a telnet session to check if an email address exists. This just does it for you via the web. So if you put in, you know, me@mine.com and you hit check, it chugs for a moment and pretty much comes back and says, no, it's not good. It's going kind of slow here on my end, but it just will verify, not valid. Client host rejected, can't find your username. Comes up with a big red thing. So if you have a list of emails and you're not sure which is good or which is bad, check out email-checker.net. This may be one of those tools you never even think about you ever using, but I came across it. I thought it was kind of a good idea.
It's there's a killer app here. I'm trying. What is it? I don't know. I mean, nothing's coming right to me, but I'm thinking there's like some, yeah, there's some, because it's instant. I mean, I stuck it in there, boom, valid. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So let me try something that's invalid. But this is, yeah, this is a great tool. Not valid. Boom. Hey, yeah, wow. I mean, it was instant. Not valid. Oh, that's great. Love it, Martin. Yeah. How'd you find this?
I don't know. probably somewhere between, crazy sports bloopers, top MLB plays, and cat videos. It showed up. It's one of those. It's, you know, every now and then you just come across a website and you're like, hey, this is cool. I probably found it on Google Plus somewhere.
That's great.
So, all right. So we missed last week. The teaser before that was I was going to pick up a range extender, and I did. Oh, yeah. And I bought the TP-Link AC750. The model is R is in Romeo, E is in Edward, 200. Looks like that. And I needed a range extender downstairs. What was happening was, so I've got a client who was asking about a range extender, and I said, you know what, I kind of need one too. I have a wireless router up here that I kind of use every now and then. It's more of my test one, so it's not always on. It's not always working correctly. I've bricked a couple of them. So we've had one downstairs that's been our primary home router. Well, then you come upstairs, and in the far reaches, the kid's room and my room, you kind of lose wireless. And so the kid said, can we fix this? And I said, okay. So I took the wireless router that was downstairs that was, you know, the Xbox and everything was hooked to it, and I brought it upstairs on the landing. We have a little nook, and I put it there. And the kid said, yay, wireless upstairs. This is great. And then you go downstairs and by the TV, and they're like, we only have a bar. Like, okay. Yeah. So I realized I could either buy another router and then, or an AP,
Or, you know what, let's try out an extender. And I've been really hesitant with extenders. I've dealt with a lot of Belkin or Netgear extenders, and they do really, really good for holding a stack of paper from blowing away in the wind, or a door opener, or
really?
a squeaky table. They just, in my experience, they have been awful. They just have never worked right. Did you have, you were going
to
say?
I tried one. I mean, a guy bought one at work. He couldn't get it to work on his. And, you know, I never mess with him. And I got it to, it worked right away up here. So he found out what he was doing wrong. I forgot what it was. But, it,
is this the Belkin?
No, this was a Netgear. It was a Netgear one.
The Netgear one.
Yeah, I just that, tried. I mean,
that was it. Like the black skinny ones.
This was a white one. It was white one. You just plug it into the wall. But it worked, but it worked. I mean, mine worked fine without it anyway, but it slowed it down. It did slow it down a little bit.
Right.
But it was a constant, you know, connection there.
Well, the ones that I've always worked with are ones that are not, they have their own separate power adapter. They look like just a modified wireless router, internal networks. They're not the plug-in, like this one's a plug-in standalone into the wall, you know.
I think that was that one, okay.
Pardon me?
I think the one I messed around with was similar. I think I plugged it into the wall.
And yeah, I think you showed it on the show one time.
I can't remember, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
But he did get it working though.
So this one, it has a 10-100 port on the bottom of it itself. So it almost acts as if it's my power line adapters.
Right.
Where you can. So I thought, oh, that was kind of cool. I didn't even realize that until I opened it up. Didn't even think about that. So this is pretty skinny. It's not very big. So I thought, well, let me give it a shot. Bought it. I'm a big fan of TP-Link. This is dual band, so it's 802.11 BG or BNG. It is 5 gig and 2.5 gig wireless. You plug it in the wall, and it has an IP address. You see them right away there. Netgear, you see two SSIDs, and you just connect to them, and then you just kind of follow the prompts. You know, what router do you want to attach it to? So you give it your wireless, and you give it the password.
Or you can use the same password you have in it already, right?
It
can bound to the same one, yeah.
Yeah, fine. So it just attaches, it becomes a repeater. This WHAT does have WPS, so they do make it easy to just do the one push button, which if you're using WPS, please don't.
Yeah.
Oh, turn that off right now. And I plugged it in the wall, and it's just been chugging away downstairs. I did, for the first time the other day, use the actual Ethernet underneath it with the cord. Great results, no problems with it. I don't remember how much I spent on this. It wasn't very expensive.
Martin, here's what I'm confused. Now, if it has an Ethernet, I don't understand why it has an Ethernet connection.
So you can plug this into the wall, make it a range extender, and then plug something to the bottom of it if you want to hard wire something.
Oh, so either way. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, you could have
one hard wire.
Wireless and plug in it. So maybe you have something that's not wireless.
Oh, you could put a switch in there.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, okay. Essentially you could put a switch in here and then go that route. I don't know what the speed would be, but yes.
Right.
Like I said, I don't remember paying very much for this.
Well, that's a lot better than the one that I messed with at one time.
$49.99 through Amazon.
That's pretty cheap.
Podnuts.com/Amazon.
And you said it's dual band?
It's, it's 2.5 and, 2.4. Sorry, yeah, 2.4 and 5. I am extremely pleased with this TP-Link AC750. The model R is in Romeo, E is in Edward 200 for $50.
Man.
Had two thumbs up for me. Really, 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 really pleased with it. Easy to follow instructions. It comes with an Ethernet cable.
So I don't know how big your house is. Mine is like a split four, if you know what that is. You walk in through the house, you can either use the front door, either go down or up.
Yeah.
So it's just like two floors.
Yeah.
Where I'm set at now with my new router right here, my new wireless router, that beautiful thing right there, Tim, so you can look at it, Tim. I'm upstairs on the computer most of the time in my room, and that's catty corner from where I'm at now, the farthest distance from the house, and it works well. Even my cheaper ones worked well. So my house is not that big. So I think you probably have a pretty good, my square footage is like maybe 1600 square foot.
I think we're at 18, 19.
Eight. Yeah, you got a bigger house.
But everything's bigger in Pacific Northwest.
Hey, everything, it grows.
I'm not commenting on that.
No. So my verdict on this is definitely two thumbs up. I would buy these. They're not super cheap. like $50, but they're not crazy expensive. So, you know, you could buy this for a client, have them do it, and if they know their wireless SSID and the password, they could set it up. It was really simple. I was amazed at how simple it was to set it up. And it's been stable. We get 4 bars, 5 bars downstairs, no problems, very, very fast, very, you know, it actually performs better than my PowerLAN adapters, which I know they're PowerLAN adapters and they may not work as well, but I'm almost tempted to get another one, put it downstairs or move that one, and then plug a switch off of it for things like the Xbox and just see how that works, if that works any better, and that way I can get rid of a PowerLAN adapter downstairs. So that's what I think. Oh, all right. So we had some emails come in, and I wanted to read these to you, because we get emails every now and then, which I really enjoy, and then I don't get a chance to talk about them, so here we go. So this one's from Jer. I'm sorry, I think it's J-E-R. And it says, "Hi guys, love the show, listen on Stitcher, need a new computer. I build lots of Windows sites, lots of pics, use fireworks, and I'm very internet savvy, not more than barely computer hardware savvy. Old computer with Vista. Do I go to Windows 7? Don't want to switch to a Mac. Thank you, Jer." So I emailed Jer back, and what I told him, well, I don't have it with me, but what I essentially said was, if he has Windows Vista now, and he could go to Windows 7. Windows 10 is coming out. I do not believe there is a free upgrade path from 7 to 10. I mean, sorry, from Vista to 10. I apologize. There is from 7. So he doesn't need to go to a Mac. It sounded, you know, that he didn't really want to go to a Mac. But yeah, I said, if you want to, you know, try out 7, if you know what Windows 7 looks like, go take a look. If you've never seen what 8 looks like, definitely go to your local big box store. Test out 8. It does take a little bit of time to grow on it, but if you're looking long-term and saying, I really want to go to Windows 10, then you can get a Windows 7 machine now and still have the same exact upgrade path, and it'll still be free, just like it is for Windows 8.1, for 10 later on when it does come out. So, but if he's not sure right now and his Vista is working fine for him, then, you know, then maybe, you know, it's still around. It's still live. So, what are you guys' thoughts? Should he upgrade?
That's a good. He should from Vista. Yes, he should.
From Vista.
Yeah.
So go to 7 or go to 8.1. If the ultimate goal is maybe just to go to 10.
Well, I got to tell you, I like 8.1. I got two Dells here. The one came with 7, and one came with 8.1. 8.1 runs so good. I mean, I don't even know if I need to go to 10 because it just runs so good. But I'm thinking they're offering it. You know, why not? You know, for the first year, they're offering it for free. But for him, for Vista, he should definitely try it. But he needs to get 7 though. He can't get, like you said, he's not going to be able to get 10 for free.
Right, not from Vista. No. But if you're looking for 7, I don't even know if you can go to a big box store and get 7 anymore.
Oh yeah,
you can.
Hold on. Well, I'll tell you right now.
Oh, you're right. No, Staples and Office Depot, they came back with 7, huh?
I think they still, yeah.
I know Costco, I have not seen any 7 machines at Costco. They've all been 8.
Yeah, Staples does still sell some Windows 7 machines.
So, Jared, that's
our right. I think it's got to be an OEM machine. I don't know if you buy a retail Windows 7, is that going to qualify for the free upgrade to 10? Or is it just
wants to buy a machine, so
right.
Okay. You know, it doesn't sound like he wants to build it.
I gotcha. So
I would say 8.1. Windows 7, as much RAM as you can get, you know, a minimum of 4. That way you have enough when Windows 10 rolls out, if you upgrade Windows 10. Don't get 7 with 2 gigs of RAM. Definitely go at least 4 if you can go more. You know, but then again, RAM is fairly inexpensive, so look and see what computer you're getting and see if it will take more than just the 4 gigs of RAM. Most of them will.
That's the trick right there, is that, you know, it's nice to get a big old wad of RAM, but, you know, get the spec of what's capable of being upgraded to. Right. Like, it comes with 4 big capable of being upgraded to 8. But yeah, well, that you can feel pretty good about. That's, if it's just 4 gigs and that you're kind of, well, you know, you don't want to
get... Well, Windows 8 are selling machines with 2 gigs of RAM. Windows 8, well, it does better with RAM than 7. Like, you know, some of those, like, there's a laptop at Staples. It comes with an SSD, like a real small one. It's, but it only has, like, 2 gigs of RAM. But it's like a tablet, I guess.
Is it an AMD processor?
No.
The reason I ask is I have seen more often than not, in my experience, and you guys may not have seen this, that when I come across a system that's running slow and it's new, I get these, you know, hey, I've got a tablet, I've got a machine, it's not working very well, could you take a look at it? It's brand new. The first thing I notice is that it's an AMD processor. Mm-hmm. And I'm just noticing that the AMD processors are not holding up as long or even as well as the Intels are right now.
Okay, here's a laptop. It's $179. Asus X25TA notebook, and it's got the Atom processor, which is Intel, but 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gigabyte flash storage. So it's a laptop, but it's kind of like a tablet, really.
Right. He says he uses Fireworks.
That's Adobe Fireworks.
Is that Adobe? So he can't go. Yeah, he's talking about he builds WordPress sites. So it sounds like he's a website developer with WordPress and Fireworks. Yeah, he's going to need something more than you know, $179 tablet or notebook.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're doing WordPress is not bulky. That's all cloud based. But if you're doing Fireworks and you're doing a lot of that stuff, the more RAM, the better.
See, I think he should. You said Windows. I think he should just go out and get a Windows 8.1 machine because he's not a novice. He's not going to have that problem. Really, any problem with Windows 8.1.
So that the increased RAM and memory usage that comes with Windows 8 is going to be more beneficial.
I think so.
Okay.
What about you, Tim? I know you're not crazy about Windows 8, but
it's grown on me. I have all these little and small computers are Windows 8.1. I've learned to work better.
I'm telling you that i5 I got a couple months ago, and it's got a regular platter drive in it. This thing boots up so fast. I mean, it's not as fast as this one here, this SSD, but the thing is just really fast. I'm really impressed with that one.
I've had opinions about Windows 8 before.
Yeah, we know.
Have they changed at all? I think we had a whole episode, literally, figuratively, dedicated to the Windows 8.
Well, you know, as I recall, I liked what they were doing with Windows 8. I understand what they were doing. They were moving the right direction. I just don't think anyone should use it. I think that was a quote. You know, look. If anybody like ever really sat down and I don't think there's anybody that would disagree with me because first of all, I was 100% correct in everything I said. It was kind of like that was a little tongue in cheek. You're gonna laugh at it.
I was laughing on the inside.
The problem was, first of all, they did it Windows style. So you want something new, well, you know, you're getting it where you want it or not. Here, just open up. We're jamming it right down your throat. And I was like, well, I don't want that. Oh, just hopefully stop making my life so miserable. I think that if the first thing, if Windows 8, it's like, here, try this. And if you were handed a tablet or, maybe a laptop, something with a touch screen, it made sense. Maybe not instantly, but, you know, very much like the Android, you know, operating system on these phones, it makes sense after you use it a little bit. You figure, okay, all right, now I get this. And I think Windows 8 is the same way. If it's a touch thing, it makes sense. But if you're just sitting down and everything is familiar, everything that you're touching, keyboard, mouse pad, your mouse, everything, the screen, everything looks the same, but the screen, everything's different. Nothing does what it's supposed to do. You can't find stuff. It was all hidden. Okay. A touchscreen fixes half of that. I think Windows 8.1 fixed the other half. Okay, so what's the opposite of obfuscate? De-obfuscate? You could actually find the stuff you wanted, like how to turn it off or the control panel, you know, these things. They actually kind of like give you a start button that kind of like does what the start button's supposed to do. You know, they kind of brought the familiar bits back, and having a touchscreen, it kind of gives you that, you know, UI you kind of use and actually almost enjoy. And so, you know, I think that Windows 8 was a disaster. I think Windows 8.1, something with a touchscreen, I think resolves nearly every issue that I had with it, and I think that Windows 10, I think it's full steam ahead. I'm not in love with Windows 8.1 or Windows 8 anything. I think that Windows 9 was probably going to be the perfect operating system ever, but we're not getting that, are we? So on to Windows 10. Windows 10, I have a lot of hope. I've seen a lot of interesting things with different devices and that. It may be something that I end up getting really excited about and love. But I don't know. I mean, as far as our user, get as much hardware as you can. Get a machine that has the ability to upgrade as much as possible, as far as, you know, the RAM and this sort of thing. I don't know, Windows 7, 8, I don't know. I still want to tell people, just get Windows 7. If you can just do it, use it. I mean, you have the opportunity to upgrade. You can upgrade, you know, get something with touchscreen. Upgrade it. I don't know. If you hate it, can you go back? Maybe. Probably. I would think that you probably could. But it seems to me like if you get Windows 7, Windows 7 is not going away anytime soon, especially if the man's using it for business. I don't know. Why commit to Windows 8/10 if you don't have to? I mean, if you get a Windows, I mean, is it making any sense?
Because Microsoft wants you to.
I don't like doing things because they want me to. But that's just kind of like, that's where I would start a discussion with a customer if they had thoughts. I mean, I don't know.
The other thing is that it sounds like his machine is currently working for him. It may be slow. He may be just thinking in the future, hey, I want to upgrade. He needs a new computer. I don't know if that's because he's slow or he just wants a new computer. So maybe hold off, see what Windows 10 is going to come out. You know, what is it going to do? Aaron Turnbull, our good friend of ours from the show here, all the Podnuts, contacted me today and said, hey, I'm using, what do you think of Windows 10? What are your thoughts on it? And I said, Aaron, I used Windows for 10 for about 15 minutes when it first came out.
Same thing here.
And I haven't used it or touched it since. Anytime a new operating system like that comes out, there's going to be a breakage. 8 came out, broke it. They forced you to upgrade or they were going to drop support because they had to go to something new. Windows 7 was really, really funky up until Service Pack 1. Then it kind of mellowed out.
Really?
I never.
7 was good. Out of the box.
Maybe it was XP.
Sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted. Go ahead.
No, maybe it was XP. Whatever. Yeah. You know, you have these, I think when the new operating systems come out, there's a learning curve. They're both on the hardware, on the manufacturers. They all have to learn to play well together. I'm curious if we're going to see a repeat of, you know, what we've seen from XP to Vista, where, you know, now we're going to 10. All of a sudden, the printers, you know, here's Windows 10. Everybody has it. I can't get my printer to work. Well, that printer manufacturer hasn't come out with the Windows 10 drivers yet, you know, or this doesn't work. Well, that the driver for the manufacturer for that hasn't come out. So are we worried about that? Should it be, you know, do people need to wait? I don't know. That's why I'm not in a position to really move up. I don't need to move up. So maybe just hold off. Wait and see, you know, what the, you know, stand back on the sidelines and watch everybody else fight it out for a little bit and then see what happens.
And, you know, that was, I got distracted. That was one thing I missed. What's prompting the question?
He wants to buy a new computer. He does Vista. WordPress, Fireworks, Pictures. He has a 7. He's got Vista. Should he go? Should he go with 7?
But
he
doesn't
want to switch to a Mac.
But does he say why? I mean, does he have to, or he just have?
He needs a new computer.
He needs. Okay, so that's what I'm trying. Yeah, I'm trying to discern if what he's using just isn't getting it done now, or if he's just got new computer fever.
Right.
Because you know what? It's like, look, you know, you got a machine in front of you. If a lot of people are like, I don't care if something new would be faster, if it would be better. This is what I'm used to. It does what I need it to do. Don't touch it. Get away from me. And you know what? Those people, I'm not going to talk them out of it because you could give something to them that actually is way better in everything in every way. And if they don't want it, they're never going to want it. And, so that's the thing. Like, if he's using the Vista machine and it's getting it done, then yeah, it's like just hang tight with that. But I mean, if he says he needs a new computer, nobody says they need a new computer. Let's say need a new computer. There must be. It's just probably not getting it done.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So. Well, that's our verdict. We don't know.
That's I think wow.
Well, I think if he goes to the store and looks at them, he'll know. He'll be able to figure out on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the latest and greatest. Now, having said that, and you guys remember me updating my wife's tablet to Lollipop and all kinds of problems. Well, I since bought her a new tablet. I got her the Galaxy Tab A8.
My wife has that one.
And it comes with 5.2. So you figure it's got it on it. You know, it came with it. So you figure it, and it worked good in the store. So newer hardware, it works great. It's much faster. So having said that, I did a factory reset for myself, and there's a site I found where you can do all this stuff to help it. Cause people were having problems, you know, with the first gen of the Nexus 7. And it did. Like I noticed, well, Facebook was messing it up, took that off. There's another app for Facebook you use. It's called Think Social Lite, and it works just as good. And so I got that working pretty good without rooting it. So I'm using that now. Let me, I got this, where is it? Let me see, paste that, if anyone wants to get that site. It's a lot of stuff to do. Oh, shoot.
You dropped your mouse.
Yeah. I'm trying to paste that link in there. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to do, but it does work. It is working. Like turn off a whole bunch of stuff, and I've done some of it, and I see improvement already. So if you still want to get a little bit of life out of those Nexus 7s out there, you can read that site.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you kind of configure, you can, like, I saw as soon as I put that Facebook on there, I'm having problems, and it's a lot of people were. I took it off. It's all right. So now how do I use Facebook? Like, I can log on to the browser, but I found that social app, I think it is, Social Lite or something like that. And yeah, it's working good with that. So, but that tablet she got, it's really nice. It's a good bit faster, quite a bit faster, actually.
Cool. Well, there you go. Another episode came in from Paul Sylvester. Paul Sylvester wrote us in not too long ago and mentioned, or was it? No, I had come across a website that he was running Spinrite. So we have two emails here regarding Spinrite. Spinrite in a VM. That was on the last show. So he actually wrote in and said, "Dear Geeksters, thanks for the mention of my blog post on how to use VirtualBox with Spinrite the easy way. I just wanted to reach out and find out what you thought about it and what else I could do to add to the batch files. What would you like to see happen? I've updated the batch files to skip a few steps. So I've wanted to make sure it's a very popular extra utility and would love some feedback on it. I've been on Podnuts before." So he episoded, it looks like it's Podnuts Daily 221.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, but I remember. I know Paul.
That's podnuts.com/PND221. There'll be a link in the show notes. He said he changed the domain from tech-linkblog.com to this new domain a few years back. And his domain is paulstechtalk.com. It's Paul's plural. He says, "I would be willing to come on and join you guys on your show and talk about my experiences with creating these small batch and why I did it. I just want to get the word out about me constantly updating the batch files to make it more useful. Thanks in advance, Paul Sylvester, owner, paulstechtalk.com." Paul, honestly, I have not had a chance to use your VM. I know. I apologize. I've been busy keeping things going, but I have used Spinrite in a VM before, and it wasn't very successful, so I'm looking forward to trying it out. And I'm going to definitely have to give it the old 1-2 on my side because I haven't done it. So if somebody else out there has, let us know. Email us, call us. I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts were. Did you guys get a chance to try it out or even use it at all?
No
worries. So we'll give it a try. So now another Paul wrote in and said, "In your program this week," so then he's referring to the one, he says, "you mentioned Spinrite and using it on a virtual box. With hard disk costing in the range of $70 to $100, I'm wondering what is this $89 program useful for? On occasion, I listen to the Security Now podcast, and I must say that Gibson's testimonials that he uses to promote his software are more confusing than helpful."
I understand why he says that.
So I wrote him...
Yeah. The one thing about Steve is that I feel like I'm a reasonably intelligent person, but I everything he says I have to listen to at least twice for my brain to really crunch it.
You're right.
And that's not him. That I think that Steve Gibson has. I've always believed he's very, very good at explaining very very difficult, you know, processes and concepts, but slowly, and I think he uses all the right words. But I still have to listen a couple times before it's like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Now I get it. But that's I kind of chuckled because I feel like I know exactly what the man's saying.
But then listen to what Scott Moulton has to say about it. I like listening to him.
Right. So here's what I wrote back to Paul. I said, Paul, thank you for your question. Hard drives will degenerate over time. Spinrite will check your hard drive sector by sector and see if there's any defects. If it finds a defect, the sector will either be repaired or marked as bad. If the sector is bad, the data will be written to another sector. Spinrite can be useful as used as ongoing maintenance to make sure that the sectors are kept in good standing. It can also be used when a hard drive goes bad. In this case, it will move the data to another good sector and mark the bad sector as bad. Most of the time, this could be used for data recovery if the hard drive will not boot. Gibson has a video that goes into further detail in his own words here, and it's grc.com/sr/whatitdoes.htm. There'll be a link in the show notes. Yes, the video is 3+ years old, and an increase in solid state drive usage has increased, but the video is talking about spinning disks. Spinrite can be used on SSDs, but only on a certain level, where only if an issue is found that tasks are performed on the hard drive. I'll be answering some of the questions from email this week. I'll bring them to the live show. That was my email to him. Then he replies back and says, thanks for the response. Seems to be some controversy about the utility of this program. I've never used it, probably never will after reading the following. Backups and drive replacement seem a better strategy. The first comment is a very telling of this reference. Whoa. And he links to a Reddit article, and then he says lots of controversy.
Can I stop you right there? Can I stop you?
Sure.
Okay, wait. But say that last line again. What is a better option?
Backups and drive replacement.
Okay, backups and drive replacements aren't the other option. Okay, I gotta stop right there. You know, backups and drive replacements
you should be doing that anyway.
You're doing that anyway. Okay, backups, you're doing that anyway, man. You know, the more backups, the better. Get backups on site, get backups off site, keep backups on site in several different types of media. Backup. A drive fails, replace that drive, man, and restore from your backups, okay? Spinrite is not what you do in place of those things. Spinrite is what you do when, for some horrible reason, those other things aren't available.
Right.
As far as data recovery. Right. So anyway, go ahead.
No, that's good. I'm going to get to that in my next email. So he lists some controversy, and he says, regarding disk maintenance, is there any controlled study showing that Spinrite as a maintenance tool extends the life of a drive? I don't know that question. How do you measure that, other than the fact that if the drive's not working, you use Spinrite, it does happen to come up, now you've extended the life, that's a success. If it doesn't, that's a failure. You know, I don't know. So my reply back to him, and this is where the conversation ended, which is fine. I said, correct. Backups and replacement of a failing drives is the best strategy. If I come across a drive that I can recover data from with Spinrite and it's failing, it's time for replacement. Backups are a no-brainer anyhow. People need backups. Spinrite is a tool and does not replace common sense. I know that Spinrite is a love-hate. There are people out there, people on Podnuts. Scott Molden from My Hard Drive Died, who's part of the Podnuts community, doesn't like it. I think that Spinrite or other hard drive utilities are a Chevy versus Ford type argument, where if you find one that you like and it works well for you, then you end up using it. I've used it. It's worked for me. I've used it, and it's not worked for me. That's my experience with it. You know, I've had good luck with it. I've had bad luck with it. It's another tool just like malware bytes, just like adware, you know, things. It's made for maintenance. It's not necessarily made for data recovery. If you need to recover data from a hard drive, an $89 tool is probably not your best bet.
I don't really agree with you there, and I'll tell you why. To me, Spinrite is not a maintenance tool. I've never used Spinrite on a drive that I believed was working fine, but had some age on it. And to me, it's running fine. I think that there's other tools that I'd rather use, specifically, it's escaping me now, in MHDD, you know, it, as a good, oh gosh, we could spend hours talking about MHDD, but MHDD, it just reads a sector, and then it reads the drive sector by sector, and then it displays, in little colored blocks, how long that read took. And so basically it examines the health of the drive sector by sector. Once it's running, you know, it's very non-invasive. It's running off it's not in a Windows environment. It's running from a live disk. I think that that's a really good way. You know, if you think there's issues, I run it. It's like, okay, all right. So, and you can run MHDD. So, you know, I believe, you know, running it periodically, comparing the results over time. I think that right there gives you a very, very a good way of gauging. That's a lot of work, and who's going to do that? To me, I wouldn't just run it SpinRite as a matter of course.
But that's what it's used for. That's what no, you.
But I don't think. But to, that's not what I use it for. Let me tell you what I use it for. I use SpinRite when I get a drive in here. I say, look, this drive's failing. I'm going to try and clone it. Well, I can't clone it. Well, I'm going to try and run my clone Zilla, and it's going to skip over the bad parts and get as much as I can. Well, all right, that fails. I get like some of it, or I get most of it. Okay. Eventually we go down the line and we use all the tools that I have, and the very last thing I have available to me is, and I'm not talking about the freezer and doing all these other things. No, I'm just talking about running software. I get to the very end of the line and the only thing I have left is SpinRite, or I say, look, and once again, real important, I put a big old asterisk in front of this, folks, is that you never do any, if you have a drive failing, you never do anything to it that's going to cause it further damage. If you get to the point where you believe you may be causing further damage, you just stop, because all you're going to do is destroy their data. You could send it off to the clean room and they could pull everything from it that way. Now, it's going to cost them a ton of money, but when it comes to data, okay, there's some data that is priceless, okay? So if you get to the point where you may be causing further damage, you just stop, okay? So, but when I get to that point where it's either SpinRite or clean room, and they're like, okay, so I can spend a few bucks with you or whatever, see what SpinRite can do, or spend upwards of $1,000 or so in the clean room. I mean, that's a decision the customer's going to make, okay? But those are the only options left. And so, that's pretty much a no-brainer for most.
But you
most
should never have, you should never get to that point if you are spending the less than $100 a year for decent backups, whether it's on-site, whether it's off-site. You know what I mean? If you ever get to the point where you're like, I have to find this data because that's the only copy of my kids, you know, You know, from ages 1 to 3, then shame on you for not having a backup. If it costs you $3,000 to get your data back, then that's a $3,000 learning experience.
That's exactly right. I mean, I'm talking about SpinRite. I'm talking about worst case scenario. Right. Unfortunately, it's very, very common, but this is the worst case scenario. I don't use this maintenance tool. It's sitting there, so I can say, look, these are your options. If you really, really need this data, you could spend all this money over there and you can talk to them about their terms and their prices, or I have this tool here. It can go through. It may, in my experience, I'd say it's probably half and half. I would say half the time it does miracles. The other half of the time it gets nothing. There is a very, very small, percentage of times. It's never happened to me personally, but I've heard horror stories where the thing goes nuts just doing what it does and
kills the drive.
It physically tears it up inside. Okay. It's a pit bull on a tire. I mean, it grabs a hold and it doesn't let go until it gets what it wants. There is some fault design where it's like, okay, well, after a million times, I'm going to give up and go to the next sector. But, you know, it's a great tool because the pit bull on a tire that won't let go.
But it's still a pit bull.
But it's still a pit bull. Right. So, you know, we're talking about worst. That's what I do in my shop. We're getting to the worst case scenario. These are your only two options left. If you absolutely must have it, you have no backups, we can send it to the clean room. You deal with them. It's going to be a lot of money. Or I can do this right here. This is what it's going to do. I can't make any guarantees. But it's as good as gone to these people at that point anyway, because they're not spending thousands of dollars.
What I posted, usually, the paragraph I posted, it's off of Steve Gisman's site. He said you should run it as a maintenance utility every 2-3 months.
Well, that's what he says. I don't
use it. I mean, I've used it on drives that wouldn't boot up at all. That's the only time I use it.
I would prefer not to. I don't trust it. I don't trust it on what I believe is a good drive.
Right.
Because I don't want to come back and find that it wasn't a good drive, but that SpinRite just took a bite out of it while I wasn't looking, and that would be my fault. But it's I don't need this.
But here, I mean, to play the other side of that coin, the point of running it as a maintenance is that it does find things that are bad and catches it before it gets to the point where you have to start doing some major recovery. If you're running it and it finds stuff, if it doesn't find level two doesn't touch it. That's why you can run level two on SSDs. Level two doesn't do anything to the drive until it finds something bad, and then it starts acting upon it. So if you're running it as a maintenance, you just run it every now and then. The same way you check the oil on your car, you never wait for the light to come on, right? You should check your oil. If you know that your car is leaking oil, you check it more often than waiting for the light to come on, because by the time the lights come on, it already has flipped a sensor that probably it's a little low in your car. You run spin right on level two. I mean, I'm just playing the
other side. I understand what you're saying, and I actually agree with you. But SpinRite isn't the tool I would use. I would use MHDD, and I would record the results, and then I would compare those results over time.
Right, and this will probably for a long time like a Ford Chevy debate, which one's better? I don't know. There, you know.
Well, MHDD is because it doesn't actually do anything to the drive.
Well, neither does SpinRite. Level two doesn't do anything to the drive.
Okay. Well, I'd rather push my MHDD than drive your SpinRite. I am a huge fan of the software. I love what it does. I just see it as a, I see it as a 5-pound sledge where maybe I just need a ball peen. So that's it. Like I said, I'm not down on it. I think I love the tool. I really love the tool. I've just decided that that's how I choose to use it. So that's all. And you know what? I wouldn't pay $89 for a piece of software when I could buy a $79 drive. I wouldn't do that to answer the question. But the problem is there. You know, it's the data, and in some cases the in mode. Come on, I mean, it's the real world. People don't back up.
I got a question about SpinRite. Now, doesn't check this to do the same thing, like check this slash R? Doesn't it try to attempt to fix things, which is the same thing what SpinRite does? Am I wrong? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah, running check this R will check the entire disk service for bad sectors, attempt once again to repair or work around any that it finds, if it can. Running, because I think it's what it marks as not to be used, bad stuff. So I don't know.
I mean, there's so many tools out there that do the same thing.
That's the Windows tools, yeah.
D7.2 comes up with, what's the one that D7 uses? When you boot up, I have it running. It tells you whether blue is good, yellow or red. The hard drive just checks the
Yeah, it's Crystal Disk Info.
Thank you, Crystal Disk Info. And that one will tell you how long your hard drive's been in use and running. And
right. But that's just regurgitating smart data.
Oh sure. I know. I'm not comparing it. I'm just.
No. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I must have missed something. Yeah. That's right. Just which is good to know. I mean, it's nice to have that smart data, but it's not like running a disk scan. And this is all spinning drives, of course. Solid state. This is a whole new world.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, those are the emails. They've been emails. I like to get emails that aren't just hey, Geeksters, good job. I high-five everything you do. Call us out, Let us know. Because we could come here and just tell you what our week's like, and that's fun, and that's fine. But, getting into discussion where we may not we shouldn't all, a three of us shouldn't agree on the same thing. Because then there's just three people. We could be just doing it. We could have a person with one show, doing the same thing. But if we're all three different, I like that.
I feel like I contributed today for once.
You did. You did for once. Oh, good grief! Geez,
this guy over here kills me, man.
I have been testing MaxMail. So MaxMail is Jeff Owens talked a couple times about this. MaxMail is the GFI equivalent, or the same people who own GFI now MaxFocus. They're spam filtering. So all you do is you take and you just pass, from whoever sending it through their spam filter and then back out and it sends it out. So I tested it with. Actually, I brought it up because I created an email account called martin@obandogeek.com, and I said, send me spam, thrash me. I gave it out. Not a whole lot has been happening with that website. So I was talking to one of my clients who said, she's been getting a lot of spam, and so I put her on this. And here are the results. Since she's been running it now for a bit of time. So from May 7th
to May 14th. These two dates are actually going to overlap, but coming up the next one. So from May 7th to May 14th, she received 937 total messages. Out of those, 78% or 731 emails were marked as spam. And they're all legitimate spam messages. So that's how much email she was getting, the spam ways. From 512 to 519, she received 745 messages. Of those, 608 or 81.6% were spam. Marked as spam. I've gone in with her. We've looked
accurately.
Accurately spam. Now, if they're not accurately spam, she can go in there and she does get emails every day that she can go in and release the email from the quarantine. So I'm going to start messing with this a little bit more. This is one client. I have a couple other clients who are thinking about coming on board. I'm trying to kind of nudge them that way. It's not super expensive. And so far, because you can filter both incoming and outgoing, I'm not filtering her outgoing spam. So I'm just incoming spam. But so far, it's looking like this is a really good situation. Hmm. As a reseller, you don't have to sign up for a reseller account. I just sell it. But my cost it's very, very cheap. And then you can upsell it however you want. They've got a model where they say, this is how much you should sell it for. And it's super reasonable. Super, super reasonable. So
that's great.
Man. It's called Max Mail. Haven't had, it's so far it was so good. She's been in Boston, so I've just been pulling stats off her report, off her stuff. I will be sitting down with her a little bit more when she gets back to try to figure out now that you've seen it working and it's been actually in production for a couple weeks. Are you getting false? Is it being too aggressive? Are you realizing that maybe some of the spam is not spam, or are you saying, or is she saying, it has saved me so much trouble, So we'll have to see.
Cool.
We'll have to see. I did want to make one correction. Last show, episode 156, I talked about Nick Shaw coming out with a new product, and I said D7-8. The next day, I got a call from Nick, and he goes, "Martin, we need to talk." So I was wrong. So hear me now. Listen. D7-8 is not coming out. What's new is this. Crypto Prevent 8 is coming out. There's not a timeline yet. But it is coming out, and I spent, 45 minutes with Nick, talking with him and the developers on there, just a hearing about what's coming down the pipeline, and some of it, my lips are zipped, but stay tuned. So Crypto Prevent 8, here's some cool stuff that's coming out with it. It's going to now be a system tray app with a kill them all flag. So you can run Crypto Prevent 8 and run the kill 'em all application, which is part of the D7 and the D7-2, which kills all the non-important processes. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. One click to switch profiles. So now you can have profiles for your mom and for you and your wife, or a student and a teacher on a laptop. So you can be more aggressive in what the student can't install and less aggressive on what the teacher can install, and you can just switch profiles. A quick enable and disable, which is cool, and then new real-time protection. So, right now, one of the things that I brought up and he has heard from is that what happens is Crypto Prevent will not let anything run from the app data / temp folder. Our good friends at the Mozilla Foundation, when Firefox installs itself, it extracts the installer files to appdata/temp folder. Therefore, Crypto Prevent keeps Firefox from installing. It's doing what it's supposed to do, but that's a huge problem. So you either have to go in and whitelist Firefox, or you go in and you just say, don't monitor appdata/temp. So this is going to give better protection. He's aware of those things, and he's making those features more granular and a better improvement. So looking forward to hearing what that is. But I did want to make a correction that there is not a D7-8. It's a new Crypto Prevent.
Very good. Whatever it is, it'll rock.
Awesome. It's going to be D-bomb.
Oh,
yeah. That's right.
I love it. You guys are so awesome.
That's right.
Oh, man. Good stuff.
Good show.
So that's what I have for our show tonight.
I'm satisfied. I feel like I got my money's worth.
There you go. I hope everybody else out there got their money's worth as well.
It was fun.
So, Tim, if you want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. Get me there, my babies.
Nice. Mitch, if people want to get a hold of us, send us an email.
Yeah, at Geesters, excuse me, at geesters@podnuts.com and send some voicemails. We haven't had any in a while at 7776-PODNUT. That's 7776-676-3688.
Very nice. If people want to get a hold of me, I'm Martin Obando. It's just Obando, Martin at ObandoComputing.com. I'm Obando Computing in the chat. I'm mobando@gmail.com on the Google Plus. Guys, thank you so much for coming back and having a great week. Great show. Had a wonderful time. You know, we'll see you next week. And don't forget to be gruntled. All right, we'll talk to you later.